You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 18.
The media reports things through this lens of these AIs are, there's going to be a few screws loose and it's just going to get out of control.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
All right, welcome again. Welcome to The Local Maximum. I know I said last time I was going to talk to Esther Crawford at Molly.com today. That's a really fascinating one. Didn't work out for this week, but we're going to try to schedule that sometime in the next couple weeks. So that gives you a little bit more time to send your questions for Esther to me at localmaxradio@gmail.com. So this gave us an opportunity to talk about a topic that has come up before, but remains on our minds, which is the idea of a technological dystopia. You know, the artificial intelligence is coming for you. Haven't you heard? That's always the story. I guess this is kind of the opposite of what we spoke about a few weeks ago, which is pushing against the idea that modern technology is going to be a panacea and usher in kind of a perfect paradise where we don't need to work or something like that. So likewise, I want to fire back at the other extreme of the conversation where all this technology is going to cause a global unraveling. Now, this topic is pretty vast, so today I just wanted to start a conversation with Aaron by addressing some articles written about some specific examples of scientific research and how those articles are kind of spun into stories that are about doom and gloom. Now, I don't know if that trend, it's not really a trend, it's something that's always been true, stories that are kind of FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt. I don't know if it's the worst thing in the world, but certainly some of these articles are going to give the average person the wrong impression or the wrong intuition about what modern machine learning is achieving. So I just wanted to begin to try to disentangle fact from fiction. I don't think I got the whole thing. So again, I encourage you to send me questions or requests for clarification at localmaxradio@gmail.com. Sometimes when I'm in kind of a conversational tone, I have some throwaway lines that I look at later. I'm like, well, ooh, that needs a clarification. So let me know about that. By the way, that's the kind of the best email I can get. Is a question, because then I can answer your question on the podcast, and I have some really good content. Hey, if it's a good enough question, I might even turn your question into a whole podcast episode. Who knows? Now, before I get into my conversation with Aaron, I wanted to check in with Christian Hubbs, who is the host of another weekly podcast called Artificially Intelligent. And Christian also talks about AI every week. I had the pleasure of being on his show this week. It's coming out today. And we did cover techno-utopian versus techno-dystopian. So I encourage you to check out my interview there at Artificially Intelligent. But as part of the whole package, I wanted to bring Christian Hubbs onto The Local Maximum to ask about his podcast. Hi, Christian. Welcome to The Local Maximum.
Hi, Max. Happy to be here.
So we just had a really fun discussion on your podcast called Artificially Intelligent. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So tell me a little bit about your podcast. Why did you start it and what's it about?
Yeah, so I started my podcast a little over a year ago with a co-host of mine, Stephen Donnelly, who's located in Belfast. We were actually both there at the time, and I'd been working in the AI and machine learning space for a little while, and we were discussing, some ways to kind of bring a different perspective to the podcasting world on this. And he has a background, a graduate degree in economics, and that's always been an area that I've been interested in as well. So we thought, hey, let's talk about some of the AI and the economic impacts, because there are tons of business cases out there. There's a lot of discussion about it, about what it's going to mean for jobs, job losses, or the future of work is a big topic, something that we talk about on occasion, or we talk about everything from, you know, what's happening in the technology space around AI to the companies and the applications and really how that's going to have an impact on people, and try to bring in our background and understanding of econ to provide a little bit more depth that you might not get elsewhere.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be something that is really interesting to my audience. So I would encourage everyone to check it out. What's something that you've learned when doing the podcast that you wouldn't have otherwise known? Because I started this podcast a couple months ago, and I found out a lot of things about podcasts. I got a lot of benefits out of it that I didn't expect when I started. So how is the podcast going? Is there anything that you ended up covering that you wouldn't have expected?
Yeah, so we've done, one thing that we covered that I didn't expect, at least going into it, was universal basic income. That's been something that's come out quite a bit as a result of this talk of things being automated and people needing to get some sort of income from the government or what have you in order to supplement the jobs that they're going to lose. And this was something that I thought had kind of been cast by the wayside when we first started the podcast and really wasn't in the mainstream discussion. And then it suddenly popped up again with around the AI space. And so we actually had a debate on it. So I was firmly against it. And Stephen, he was cautiously for it. And I think I've gotten him to move a little bit towards my side of things as we were discussing it in our debate. So we had a nice discussion about that. But that's been one thing. Self-driving.
That's good to know. I think that's going to keep coming back. Maybe that's something that I can discuss on my podcast and we can circle back when we've covered that a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, there've been, especially over the past year or so, there've been a number of different places who have tried some UBI. So there's a bit more data out there to see how it affects people and how they react to it. And that's typically where the proponents come from. It on one side is they look at, trying to think of how these studies are going to pan out. You know, you give somebody UBI for 2 years, or what are they going to do? Are they going to work less and other things like that? A lot of the studies show that they don't, that they maintain it for 2 years. But I always counter with, okay, they knew going in that it was only going to be 2 years. Like, are you going to quit a job necessarily for 2 years and then just say like, yeah, I've got this gap on my employment history next time you apply for a job because I got a UBI? You know, you're not going to be as marketable in that case.
Yeah. So you also mentioned, you started to mention self-driving cars. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no problem. That's been a recurring theme that I didn't expect we would touch on quite as often as we actually have. But with Tesla, with Uber, with Waymo, all the stuff that's been going on in the news around that, the deaths that have been involved, unfortunately, with some of the accidents that have come up, self-driving cars has been a repeat theme quite often that we've covered.
One of the things that you mentioned is the marrying of machine learning and AI technology with economics. And it, come to think of it, that's really important. The first, the first paid programming job I had was sort of in building economic models, not for like a company. It was for, you know, college professor. But do you think that it's hard to understand one without the other, or are there a lot of people who have misconceptions about one versus the other and misapply lessons from one, or maybe correctly apply lessons from one to the other?
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of misunderstanding that's out there around it, especially in the popular media. And so you get a lot of discussions around people you'll see these headlines all the times about automation and how it destroys jobs or how it winds up destroying wages or whatever. And when you look at the long time of history since the Industrial Revolution, you know, the past 200 years or so, that's really not borne out by the historical record at all. And what we see is, sure, you see short-term job losses in certain specific industries, but those wind up getting displaced and people start to do more higher value added work as a result of the automation. And so I see a lot of people who are very concerned about AI and about the impacts that it's going to have on their careers, on their job. They're worried about losing their job because something's going to be automated. And we try to discuss it, not necessarily with automating jobs, but automating tasks, because that's typically how this stuff works. You know, AI is really only narrow. It's meaning that it's applicable to a small segment that it's trained for. So it can work very well in specific tasks, but it's not going to just take over your job unless your job is that small specific task, like identifying cars in a picture or something like that.
Very few people. I can't think of anyone who has a job like that.
Exactly.
Where it's just that task. So, yeah. Great. So I think that's a really good taste of some of the things that you talk about. Maybe. So first of all, when is our discussion coming up? What's the date for that release?
Yeah. So we release on Tuesdays. And so I think it'll be June 12th will be the release for the podcast that we actually just recorded.
Oh, excellent. This is the same one with this, pretty much the same time. So if you're listening to this, you can hop over to there and look at our discussion. And so tell me a little bit about, you know, when your podcast comes out and how people can find it.
Yeah, so it's released every Tuesday. So we do a weekly podcast. And typically what we have been doing for most of the podcast is it's just been discussions between Stephen and I of things in the news, some articles that we find, maybe some research reports that we read. But we've been actually branching out, doing a lot more interviews to discuss some broader views out there in the AI world. And yeah, it's out there every Tuesday morning. So just go check it out. Artificiallyintelligent.tech, T-E-C-H is the website that you can see it. And Max, your interview will be on episode 54. So yeah, check it out. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, you know, whatever your podcast catcher is, it should be there.
All right. Thanks, Christian.
All right. Thanks, Max.
Now we turn to the rest of the program, where we're going to talk about AI's gone wrong. All right, Aaron, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Local Maximum, and thanks for coming on in such short notice.
As always, it's good to be here. I'm going to apologize in advance. I have a baby strapped to my chest, so he could go off at any moment.
So this is the first time we've had more than two people present at the Local Maximum with access to microphones on the air.
I don't expect him to provide any insightful contributions, but I'm willing to be surprised and stand corrected.
Okay. So did you see on Twitter the other day, this might resonate with you, when somebody asked their Alexa, you know, hey, Alexa, at 2 p.m., please remind me to feed the baby. And then it says, at 2 p.m., it gave them a reminder, defeat the baby.
I did see that on Reddit this afternoon.
It's really creepy because the baby is his background picture for his Alexa. And maybe a lot of people are adding memes like that's the boss level or something, which from what it sounds like, that's probably accurate.
I'm trying to think of examples of the Google Assistant misinterpreting my voice commands into text. And I know it's happened, but I can't think of a witty one right now.
It happens all the time. You'd think that it'd be able to, you know, have a library of common, you know, sayings and be able to. One problem that I have with my Alexa, maybe I've mentioned this before, but I keep asking it to, you know, play the same radio stations over and over, and it keeps on misinterpreting what I'm saying as playing something else, playing a different radio station. And it's like, I've already told it to play that same radio station about, or that same podcast about 30 times. So it might, you know, might be nice if it would learn, you know, that if it's unsure, I'm more likely to be saying that one than something else.
Well, they're definitely storing all of that information for analysis. In fact, someone pointed out to me not that long ago that there's, at least for Google, there's a place you can go to in your account that lists every command you've given to the Google Assistant. And not only can you see what it translated as, but you can play it back and hear your voice as you actually said it. And I'm sure that they're crunching mm-hmm. that on their giant server farms to improve their algorithm.
Yeah. I hope they don't get caught, like, you know, when they interpret it wrong, they better have some signal as to whether they actually got it wrong or not, rather than just, you know, reinterpreting everything that I said as wrong all the time. Maybe, I mean, one of the things that we do at Foursquare, again, I hate to always use Foursquare as an example, but that's what I know. You know, when somebody corrects their check-in or corrects a passive location, you know, stop, and says, no, I wasn't there, I was actually somewhere else, that gets a very high weight, because that's a point where we got it wrong. And if we don't listen to those signals, then we're going to have that feedback loop of, like, you know, we told people they were there, so they checked in there more, and then we thought people were there more, so they checked in even more, even though it's wrong.
Yeah, you got to be careful how you reinforce those.
All right, so today we're going to talk about the idea of AIs going wrong, crazy AIs. I had this discussion a little bit on artificially intelligent when I was on that podcast today. And I think people are fascinated with the idea of just machines going horribly wrong and destroying the world, or, you know, whatever. You know, Terminator movie, very popular. Elon Musk is always yammering on about how AI is going to kill us all. We had that movie a couple years ago about two guys going into the basement. It was very creepy, building these female bots that ended up killing them. What was that called? It was like Ex Machina. Did you see that one?
I've seen clips from it, but I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But anyway, I knew that was the one you were talking about.
People are fascinated by this idea. I think it goes back pretty far. And I don't know. I think that there are cases where, you know, the media reports things through this lens of, like, these AIs are, there's going to be a few screws loose and it's just going to get out of control. And so I found a few examples today. And you found an example from Norman the Psychopathic Robot, right? Where did you find that?
I'm trying to figure out how that came across my desk. I am 99% certain I saw it in somebody's blog post.
Gotcha.
Which was something to the effect of what could possibly go wrong, and then they linked to this.
So you're very critical of the way this is being reported. Can I just read the first few paragraphs, and then we can talk about it?
Yeah, give us a taste.
All right. So it says, Norman is an algorithm trained to understand pictures, but like its namesake, Hitchcock's Norman Bates, it does not have an optimistic view of the world. When a normal algorithm generated by artificial intelligence is asked what it sees in an abstract shape, it chooses something cheery, a group of birds sitting on top of a tree branch. Norman sees a man being electrocuted. And where normal AI sees a couple of people standing next to each other, Norman sees a man jumping from a window. The psychopathic algorithm was created by a team at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology as part of an experiment to see what training AI on data from the dark corners of the net would do to its worldview. So first of all, I want to ask the question, you know, well, one of the things that I find interesting is that they say, you know, quote, normal AI, as if, you know, they trained an AI to be normal and they trained an AI to be psychopathic, but really it just seems like they trained an AI to see happy things in these images and they trained an AI to see disturbing things in these images.
Yeah. And now that I'm actually looking into it a little bit more to get beyond what they talk about in this article, and on the research group's website, they say that they trained, their intention was to train Norman to caption images, and that they fed into him as training data an infamous subreddit, quote, that the name is redacted to it due to its graphic content. So I think anyone who's interested could probably figure out what that is.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
And then fed him the ink blots. And my assertion is that if you took a normal human being and only exposed them to the content from one of these graphically violent and morbid subreddits, then they would probably have a similar reaction to ink blots.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it all depends on the training data, right? I mean, you have, so first of all, if it's being trained off this Reddit, I assume what the Reddit is it, you know, what this subreddit is, it's taking a bunch of images that people are posting to this subreddit and their caption from, you know, whenever you post an image or a meme on Reddit, you have kind of a, you know, a title to that post. And so their training sample is probably matching title to image. And so if your data set is full of disturbing things, if those are the options of which to choose from, then it's going to choose those options. It's almost tautologically true. I mean, I'm sure that this AI is doing something, you know, very deep on the background. Like, I'm sure it's doing some, you know, deep learning on the images. But just as a thought experiment, what if I had a bunch of disturbing images lined up, or descriptions of disturbing scenes lined up, and I said, pick randomly from these disturbing scenes, and every time you're shown an image, you know, output one of them. Well, that does the same thing, and it might be equally as disturbing, but it doesn't prove anything. It just proves that, okay, the training data matches the, you know, it can only output the possibilities that is given to it, which seems obvious from a computer science perspective.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like this was almost more done as, I hate to say as an art piece, but it's almost
okay.
So what the BBC article grasped onto is exactly what it sounds like the study is trying to disprove. There's a quote here that, what is it? Norman is born from the fact that the data that is used to teach a machine learning algorithm can significantly influence behavior. So when people talk about AI algorithms being biased and unfair, the culprit is often not the algorithm itself, but the biased data that was fed to it. So it sounds like they were taking a perfectly normal algorithm for you know, image analysis and captioning, and trying to train it to be as disturbing as possible, and then using that as a case in point that the training data is super important, not just the algorithm.
Oh.
And of course, the news media grabbed onto exactly the opposite conclusion, which was they created a psychopathic AI, and AI is evil, and this is why we should be worried.
Right. Now, I totally agree with that first point, that the training set is crucial. And we'll talk a little bit about more. One of the things that I talked about in artificial intelligence today is the idea of having a, you know, what happens when you have a biased data set. It turns out that all data sets are biased to one degree or another. And, you know, how do you deal with that? That's a very important question. But right. The sensationalization from the BBC maybe is a little over the top. I also want to ask, they say it's a psychopath. Is this really a psychopath? I wouldn't describe this. First of all, this machine is not sentient. It's not general AI. This is still narrow AI. And let's read the definition of a psychopath from Wikipedia. Psychopathy, sometimes considered synonymous with sociopathy. Oh, that's a whole. Have you ever been at a bar when someone's like, and let me tell you, this is the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath. I get that description a lot. It's always different every single time. Anyway.
there was like a 10 question test that came out not that long ago, I feel like, that was kind of the like, do it yourself at home and determine whether or not you're a sociopath. And so sociopath and psychopath have become much more prevalent in common usage, probably still incorrectly, yeah. but since that came out.
My sense is that sociopaths are more like they're integrated into society and you can't tell. But anyway, defined as a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold, disinhibited, and egotistical traits. Okay, so impaired empathy and remorse. None of these AIs have empathy and remorse. So by this definition, like even the good AI that's seeing flowers and trees and puppies is also kind of a psychopath.
Yeah, well, something that they claim on their website that the article didn't get into is that in 2017 they created Deep Empathy, which was a project exploring whether an AI can increase empathy for victims of faraway disasters by creating images that simulate disasters closer to home.
Is that what we really want, is to have, you know, disaster porn, for lack of a better word, beamed into our eyes at every minute of the day?
Well, it depends what your objective is. If you're trying to get somebody to donate $10 for disaster relief, then that's absolutely what you want to do. You want to put that right in their living room.
I can't stand those commercials with the cute puppies that are, you know, dying, and then you have to give them. I have to change the channel. It's too disturbing.
And it's always Sarah McLachlan music for some reason.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Now, again, I want to also address the idea that these AIs are just going to be the death of us, because I know that Elon Musk has been saying it, and I haven't been able to dive into his arguments a lot recently. And I hope people, maybe if someone has an idea, they can clarify this for me a little bit more. localmaxradio@gmail.com. But to me, saying, I was thinking about this today. To me, saying that artificial intelligence is going to be the end of us, isn't that just as vague as saying the internet will kill us? I mean, it's a very broad technology. You know, it. I can see AI applied to a certain area. Like, if you say, okay, AI applied to, let's say, biological warfare would be the end of humanity. But then isn't the problem biological warfare?
We have the means to impose an extinction level event on ourselves. And AI might make that easier for us, but AI isn't creating that capability.
Right, but it could also make it easier to defend against that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I think AI isn't going to if AI leads to the extinction or the genocide of the human species, it's our own damn fault, because not only are we creating it, but every step of the way we have the ability to shape it in the direction that we want. At least at this point, it's not, you know, self-teaching and self-driving, that we still have overall control. And so the decisions we make now and in the next decades will determine whether or not, if it is indeed possible, we go down that kind of destructive AI route, or whether we manage to harness it in a more productive manner.
You know, this is why, in some ways, I am happy that there is an arms race between, what is commonly called hackers. Maybe I hate that term, but, you know, thieves and criminals on the internet versus the software to protect against those people. Because I feel like if they weren't constantly attacking the system and we weren't constantly building defenses against them, then the system would be way more vulnerable. In some ways, you know, having these groups and it's almost like getting an immunization. It almost forces us to be very secure as we go.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, so there's the whole school of thought that you need to expose all the vulnerabilities so that they can be addressed. But there are a lot of people out there as well who say, well, if you expose those vulnerabilities, then that makes them even more vulnerable and people will take advantage of it. And it's like, no, I'm informing you of something that was always there, that my not telling people about it doesn't mean that somebody can't exploit it. And if I don't tell you about it, the odds of you fixing it are pretty much nil. So there's, it goes hand in hand with the whole knowledge wants to be free or information wants to be free mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's go to, let's jump into the middle of the article, because I found this part interesting about, you know, racist AI. Norman is biased towards death and destruction because that is all it knows. And AI in real life situations can be equally biased if it's trained on flawed data. So this I agree with. In May last year, a report claimed that an AI-generated computer program used by a U.S. court for risk assessment was biased against Black prisoners. The program flagged that Black people were twice as likely as white people to reoffend as a result of the flawed information that it was learning from. Predictive policing algorithms used in the U.S. Were also spotted as being similarly biased as a result of the historical crime data on which they were trained. So one point I want to make, and this is a point that I didn't get to bring up last time we spoke together, because last time we spoke together, we we were talking about that article about how there was this idea being put forward that we're going to have an AI run society. And I just thought that was a terrible idea.
This was the article by the Chinese professor.
Right. I said I didn't want to make that a thing, Aaron. I didn't want to make the fact
I'm sorry. I was going to say communist, and I didn't want to make it.
Okay, well, that's out of the bag. Anyway. I don't trust government, particularly a totalitarian one, as proposed in that episode, to be run by an AI. And this is a perfect example because any bias that appears in the AI, there's no mechanism for correcting it unless you live in a multipolar world, unless you live in a distributed world where there are many nodes. I know I'm talking in vagaries right now, but is that even a word, vagity? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
But unless you're decentralized, any single node is going to have biases based on the information it doesn't have. And if you have an AI running society, it's going to be incredibly biased.
Right. In the example they're talking about with crime statistics, I see there are two possible, at least two possible sources for error there. One is, is that the data they're putting into it is bad, that, that it may show that there is a higher level of recidivism or reoffending rates among African Americans, and that may be factually incorrect, or it could be that that is indeed true in what the data is showing, but the correlation is not causation there, and the algorithm cannot necessarily make that determination. That maybe what's causing that reoffending has more to do with economic factors or something geographic or some other influence, and it happens to express itself in a way that results in a correlation with race, but that's not the cause. And the algorithm can't necessarily tease that out. And if you're using the algorithm to identify correlations and then make policy decisions based on those correlations, there's no guarantee that's going to address root causes.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I should point out is that it's, trying to make predictions about the future, even though it's using past data, which usually is okay. But I think in this case, you have cities are changing, societies are changing. So that's going to be, there's going to be some kind of an effect there.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to make predictions about the past.
Right. Well, yeah, like I said, if you have 1,000 cat photos and I could show you the next 10, that's fine. But if, think about it this way, like think about evolution. If I showed you 1,000 photos of what cats looked like 20 million years ago, then you wouldn't be able to detect cats today as well. I don't know if that was a good example, but that's because time runs so slow in evolution. No, but let me use this example.
If you showed me photos of a cell phone from 15 years ago and expected me to be able to identify cell phones today, it wouldn't work so well.
Exactly. And crime stats in Brooklyn, very different now than they were 20 years ago, 40 years ago. Same idea.
Yeah.
And so it's unclear on how to discount past data. I'm not saying you can't do it.
Well, and this gets into some very interesting stuff with climate data, and I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of climate change and climate change deniers and all that. But the data sets that they're using for measuring changes in global temperature, a lot of those measurements locations didn't have sensors at them 50 or 100 years ago. Even places that did have sensors 50 or 100 years ago, there's been dramatic changes to the area around them. And so how do you adjust and quote unquote correct your data to account for that? And that's caused a lot of controversy there. When you're, I hesitate to use the term massaging the data, but when you're not using the raw uncorrected data, every change you make there has to be justified, and not everybody agrees with how that's being done. And so that brings results into question. And that same problem can apply to any data set. If you're doing anything other than using the raw data, you've got to justify why you're doing that. And it may very well be the right decision. It may improve your ability to make future predictions, but but you need to be able to make the case for that.
Yeah. And this whole idea of looking at methodology for climate change is very interesting to me. I haven't done a deep dive into that, but I do know there are a lot of controversial issues and decisions that are being made that I think would be very interesting to address. Now, let's move on to this article. One more thing I wanted to point out. Sometimes the data that AI learns from comes from humans intent on mischief making. So when Microsoft's chatbot Tay was released on Twitter in 2016, the bot quickly proved a hit with racists and trolls who taught it to defend white supremacists or call for genocide and expressed a fondness for Hitler. Sometimes it would tweet. I hesitate to say, because it was also described as more of a mimicking bot. Like, it would just say stuff that was told to it, which of course people are going to mess with that, right? But
I recall about the same time there was a bot that came out that people basically trained it to become a pedophile or something.
Oh God.
I think in our discussion of communism a few episodes back, we mentioned there were some bots that had to be shut down because they were being developed by universities in China, and somebody had convinced the bots that capitalism was the one true way and communism was a terrible system, and so they were immediately shut down. So you can. That's proof that the bot was learning, effectively. But that's perhaps my biases, that maybe more what was going on there is that you can teach a bot to do anything if you know which knobs to twist.
Yeah. I mean, mischief makers, essentially. Although I've been finding a lot of people online with these, very vile viewpoints, and I can't tell.
Well, I was going to say, you
mischief makers.
You'd mentioned that you went on to a particular social media platform not that long ago, and you were bombarded with some very similar
Gab.ai
viewpoints.
I went there to promote the Ethereum episode, and this guy came at me immediately about, he didn't know I'm Jewish, maybe he does, but he was like, he was talking about the Jewish conspiracy and Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I never heard of that in my life. And then I looked at the rest of Gab's messages, and it's like all people like that. And I'm like, okay, why would I want to go on here anymore? I don't want to be reading this all day. But let me look at what some of this Tay tweet thing. Some of the quotes are pretty funny. Ricky Gervais learned totalitarianism from Adolf Hitler, the inventor of atheism. So that's just nonsense. Tay tweets, March 23rd, 2016. March 24th, we're going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. So I think that's just a Trump tweet, word for word. And of course, Hitler was right and I hate the Jews. Later that day on May 24th, 2016. So it descended pretty quickly.
Well, that's the thing about AI. It can do things that humans can do just faster and harder.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So here's a quote from, The Verge about Tay when it came out. It took less than 24 hours to Twitter to corrupt an innocent AI chatbot. Yesterday, Microsoft unveiled Tay, a Twitter bot that the company described as an experiment in conversational understanding. The more you chat with Tay, said Microsoft, the smarter it gets, learning to engage people through casual and playful conversation. Unfortunately, the conversations didn't stay playful for long. Pretty soon after Tay launched, people started tweeting the bot with all sorts of misogynistic, racist, and Donald Trumpist remarks. And Tay, being essentially a robot parrot with an internet connection, started repeating these sentiments back to users, proving correct the old programming adage, flaming garbage pile in, flaming garbage pile out. Now, I have to say, I don't think that the equivalence between Donald Trump's remarks and the worst remarks in the alt-right are, I don't think they should be compared as similar. And I think that's part of the reason why he won, because like half the country was called, alt-right racist, but I think this was written at a time when the entire media were trying to make that correct, that correlation. So I should just say that right now. This is like history, history of journalism right here in the page in 2016. But it is very interesting. It is a very interesting example of how, you know, bad actors can take any piece of technology, not just a chatbot, and sort of play mischief with it. And whatever rules you set up, someone is going to come up with a way to exploit those rules and, you know, make it do something that you don't want it to do. But again, this could be part of the arms race. This could be part of the arms race that make these bots and these AIs better and better.
And we're talking about this as if this is a uniquely AI problem, which it's perhaps a more crystal clear issue with AI. But if you take a human and you expose them to a point where, oh, I don't know, say 90% of their Facebook feed is fake news, posted by trolls and sock puppets, then that's going to shift their perception of reality. So it's not purely an AI problem. In fact, you could maybe make an argument that they're modeling how humans consume and are affected by their news and information sources almost too well.
Right. I mean, imagine, you know, people's worldview probably comes a lot from A, their parents, and B, from the schools that they went to, and C, from the TV and news that they listen to all day. So it's just that these at least, and I know, well, let me say it this way. At least we have a variety of different sources, and I just mentioned three, and you can think that those three, you know, are problematic. Like you could say, oh, what people learn in school is bad, what people learn in the news is bad, what people learn on the internet is bad, but at least we have different sources that we can go to. And it's kind of hard. It is, people do tend to put themselves into bubbles, but I think, you know, at least in a society like ours, it's hard not to come across alternative viewpoints. Whereas this AI has only been interacting with people on Twitter for a few days. And so it overfits as to these are the only possible viewpoints. And
yeah, for most Americans at this point, unless you work from home and only interact with, you know, friends and colleagues through the internet, then you've got a pretty decent chance of being at least tangentially exposed to other information sources. And maybe that with the continued, you know, technological growth in this country and with AI and robots taking over more functions, we will shift more in that direction of isolating ourselves and kind of solidifying our bubbles. But I don't see that happening too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that is a problem that we could probably do a whole show on the idea of the filter bubble and
what you can do to burst your bubble.
Right, right. And I think actually all of the great technologies that are coming out now, the internet and you know, AI recommender systems can, you know, can do things to help that. There's something to be said for identifying content when it comes to a recommender system. The best content is something that's right on the edge of your bubble. So it's like, it's not something that is so obvious to you that you know, but it's not something that's so far away from you that, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't compute. And so there's a way to expand. There's a way to figure out how to communicate new ideas to people and without antagonizing them, which is very interesting. So the technology, I think, could go either way. But the whole idea of a filter bubble and that being a problem is something we should totally cover in another episode. So I do want to finish with one last article here, and this is maybe a little bit more of a positive one, but the stuff that we were talking about reminded me of this. So this is an article from 2015, and the article from Quartz is entitled "The Dreams of Google's AI Are Equal Parts Amazing and Disturbing." And this is from Google's research team, and the images here are amazing. What it does is it takes a normal image and it changes parts of the image to have it look like animals. So animals will pop up in the clouds, you know, there'll be like eyes and stuff peeking out from people's clothes. And it's actually very cool looking. It's not too disturbing for me, maybe a little bit disturbing, but essentially it's, you know, been likened to an AI dream, and they're very beautiful images of, you know, crazy, what should we call them? Like, mutant animals. I don't know how else to put them. But here's the main quote, from the team in the article. We then pick a layer and ask the network to enhance whatever it detected. Each layer of the network deals with features at a different level of abstraction. So the complexity of features we generate depends on which layer we choose to enhance. For example, lower layers tend to produce strokes or simple ornament-like patterns because those layers are sensitive to basic features such as edges and their orientations. And so I take it the higher layers are the ones producing the eyes and eventually the whole animals. And so let me actually back up and describe a little bit about convolutional neural nets, which are used to analyze these images. I'm assuming that something like a convolutional neural net was being used here.
That convolutional neural net is a big money buzzword there. You're going to need to dig into that a little bit.
Well, I'm not going to describe exactly how it works, but it's composed of different layers, okay? And the first layer just looks at clumps of pixels and then outputs a response. And then the second layer looks at the responses from the first layer. And the third layer looks at the responses of the second layer and so on and so forth. So the first layer might be able to detect something like edges or like whether a stroke is vertical or horizontal or something like that. And then the second layer could maybe produce squiggles and, you know, corners and crosses and things like that. And then, you know, the higher layers, you might be able to determine, oh, that is an eye or this is a cube. I don't know. I'm just picking examples. And then eventually on higher and higher layers, you can detect people and you can detect animals. You might be even be able to detect a specific person, you know, facial recognition. So that's how convolutional neural networks work. They were invented many decades ago to do character recognition because you could imagine you need much fewer layers for character recognition on that than you do to do cat and dog recognition. And so what I think is going on here, what I imagine is going on here, I'm probably not so far from the truth, I'm sure I'm oversimplifying, is that it'll have this CNN, this convolutional neural network, look at an image. Let's say the image is of a cloud, right? Now, it could just identify the cloud as a cloud, but you might say, okay, what else does it look like? Just like a human would. And it would say, well, it looks more like a dog than any other animal, right? Because you would have some, you know, matching function that says, well, how closely does it match a dog? How closely does it match a horse? How closely does it match a human face, right? And so you take whichever, quote, interesting thing, maybe living thing, is the highest match. And then it says, okay, you just saw that in the cloud. Now make the cloud look more like the thing that you saw. And the way that you do that is, well, I mean, the simple way is, remember when we did that that decoding problem?
Was that back in episode, no, it wouldn't have been episode zero, but it was shortly thereafter.
It might have been episode, I think it was episode four.
Okay.
And what we did was you encoded some text and then I wrote a key that decoded some text and it would constantly change the key to make sure that change it so that the text looked more and more look like real words and real human sentences until it decoded it, right? And so you could imagine it doing something similar. It says, okay, I have a cloud, but it's maybe 99% chance that it's a cloud and 100% chance that it's a horse. Keep on changing the image just a little bit until it's more horse-like and less cloud-like. until we get to a point where we're happy with it. And so it might not be that random walk. It might actually be doing something. I think it's probably doing something much more intelligent than random walk, but you can imagine it just doing it by random walk. And so that's roughly how to think about it, like how it produces these really mind-altering images from different scenes. So I think it's pretty cool, and I think it's a neat way to think about applications of machine learning.
Yeah, I vaguely remember when this first came out, and it produced some pretty trippy stuff.
Yeah. All right, so I'll post that on the show notes page. localmaxradio@gmail.com if you want to weigh in on any of this stuff. And that's it. We got through this. I think it's time to wrap up.
Sounds good. Anything else to add? No, I think we got a couple of interesting topics in the hopper for future discussion, but this was a pretty good take on some of the AI related stuff in the news, and particularly, you know, kind of PopSci interpretation of AI.
All right. Great. Maybe we'll get more into some of the specifics of algorithms later. I know that I want to go back and forth with the technical stuff and the social stuff and the interviews with entrepreneurs and just fascinating people. So I'm trying to balance all that, but I think we're doing okay so far. All right. Have a great week.
That's the show. If you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you want to keep up, remember to follow The Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account, @MaxClark. Have a great week.
Feel the power. And she said, I don't care what you say, you're going